Welcome to Monday Morning Homilist.
I'm Father Manny Alvarez.
And I'm Jorge Santibáñez. Every Monday morning, we dive deeper into the previous Sunday's readings and homilies.
And towards the end, we veer off to talk about life and definitely talk a little sports.
Enjoy. Sunday's Word of the Lord, digging deeper, getting more. Monday Morning Homilist. Good morning. Happy Monday. How are you doing, Father?
I'm doing much better than you are.
Slightly.
This is take two. The first take was a complete outtake, which we will not share. But Jorge's in a great mood this morning.
I am.
Good for you.
I am. It was my daughter's birthday weekend, so we had a...
My goddaughter's birthday weekend.
We had some fun.
Fun that I did not take part in because I was doing the Lord's work. I was shepherding the sheep.
That's right. So on Good Shepherd Sunday.
On Good Shepherd Sunday. So, great weekend. We had Mass with our religious ed First Communion kids as they get ready for their First Communion on May 18th. And it was a beautiful teaching Mass. It was a little slow this weekend because, for whatever reason, we only had one wedding. And I found out that the other wedding we did have was moved to Paris.
Oh.
Okay.
Wow.
So, Father Andrew and I looked at each other when I finished the Mass with the kids. It was 11 o'clock in the morning. We look at each other and like, well, what do we do for the rest of the day? We're used to having baptisms and weddings and weddings and weddings. And it was a nice, chill Saturday for the most part. And we're like, okay.
You're never supposed to say that out loud.
That's all right.
Not in ministry.
That's okay. Oh, no, I more than made up for yesterday. So, but no, it was a great weekend. And we'll get into the readings right now, because we had Good Shepherd Sunday, which is also World Day of Prayer for Vocations. And if you read the bulletin column, I know Jorge did, because he edited it. I told the story again yesterday, because it's a great story. We're not used to this imagery that Jesus offers in the gospel of, I am the Good Shepherd, I lay down my life for my sheep. We're not used to the imagery of just looking out at a pasture and seeing it filled with sheep. Much less are we used to seeing a shepherd with the sheep. So first time I went to the Holy Land, we're coming down from, you know, we're driving down from Nazareth. We stop off at a site of the Jordan River, because Jordan River divides Israel from Jordan. And so we go to this site to renew our baptismal vows. And then from there, we're going to drive down this highway that divides Israel and the country of Jordan down to the Dead Sea. And so as we're driving down, we look to our right. I look to the right, and I see this beautiful pasture. It wasn't, you know, green as we read in the scriptures, but it was a pasture, and it was filled with sheep. And I just found it remarkable, because I had never seen that many sheep. I had maybe seen a couple of sheep in Europe here and there, but I'm seeing hundreds and hundreds of sheep. And I tell the bus driver, and I tell the tour guide, can you please stop so we can just take this image in instead of just going by at 50 miles an hour. And we did. So we get out, and maybe about 15 people on the tour got out of the bus to see this and to take pictures and to take it in. And that's part of the Holy Land, is you're taking in, that's why the Holy Land, they call it the fifth gospel, because really it's where the gospel comes to life. You take in all this imagery and all these things that Jesus talks about in the scriptures that you can, you know, you have in your imagination of how it went down. But when you're actually there, it comes to life. And so this gospel and Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, are coming to life as I see these sheep. And now they're making their way, this flock is making their way towards the highway to, you know, take in this curiosity. You know, who are these people that are taking pictures of us? And who are these people that are just staring at us? They're just flocking to us. They're grazing and they're eating the grass below them. And as they're inching closer and closer to the highway, not that they were in any danger because there's a fence that divides them from the highway, but as soon as they start getting close to the fence, you hear this sound. And it was a lot louder than we just heard, but it was the shepherd making a clicking sound. All of a sudden, the sheep stop and start going towards the shepherd, and he says something. Now, we are very close to the West Bank. We're very close to Jericho, and so we know that this person was probably a Palestinian, probably Arabic, doesn't matter, but the sheep heard his voice, and instinctively followed the voice of the shepherd. Not that they were in any danger, but the shepherd wanted them to go in a different direction, wanted them to graze in a different part, didn't want them to graze close to the highway. And to me, that was remarkable because that is exactly what Jesus is talking about in John chapter 10 when he gives us this imagery of him as the good shepherd. I am the good shepherd. I know mine and mine know me. And so those sheep knew the voice of the shepherd. They knew what that voice sounded like, and they knew that they had to follow him. And that was very funny because yesterday at the 9 a.m. Mass, we had the second grade children, the ones that just did their first communion last week. And they were up there, and we were talking about, you know, the shepherd and the sheep, and I brought back the imagery they had for their first penance, mm-hmm. where they bring the little lamb up, you know, up to the altar and place it by Christ, the good shepherd. And we talked about that imagery. And I asked them, what do sheep do? And they're like, not much. You know, they got the wool. And I go, well, what's the sound they make? Bah. And I go, so then God, you know, are they intelligent animals? I asked, no, they're like, not really. And, you know, I kind of delved into other things, but there's this little kid, as I finish up the homily, there's this little kid that had his hand up the entire last 3 minutes of my homily. He was off in the corner, you know, by the Paschal candle. And, you know, I'm always afraid when the kids are up there that the Paschal candle will fall on them or something. Anyway, so the kid has his hands up for the last 3 minutes of my homily, and I finish my homily. And I'm trying to get across this point that, you know, God calls us a sheep, and we're supposed to follow him. I know mine know me, I lay down my life for my sheep, etc. And he's still thinking about that point that I just made about the sheep and their intelligence. And so he's waiting there and 3 minutes. And then I finally said, all right, I'm done with the homily, but you have your hand up. You really must have something important to say. And he's like, Father, and I had the handheld mic so everybody in the church could hear him. I go, if sheep are unintelligent, he used the word, second grade, he used the word unintelligent. If sheep are unintelligent and God calls us his sheep, does that mean that God is calling us unintelligent? And I'm like, bingo. I go, you got the point of the homily. We don't know where we're going. We don't know the way to get to heaven. That's why we have to follow the voice of the shepherd. That's why we have to follow him blindly, because there is a reason why God calls us a sheep. It's not that he's insulting us, that he knows that we don't have the intelligence to grasp him, to be able to get to heaven. So we have to follow him. We have to recognize his voice. And that's something very beautiful that kind of, you know, wrapped up. The homily went long because of that question. Especially a homily directed at children. You know, I don't preach long to the children. But it was a beautiful reminder of things that the kids, even though that I was trying to make that point very subversively to the parents, to the adults in the room, this little kid
picked it up.
Yep. He picked it up and he got it. Yeah,
but we are pretty dumb. We are. We are. And it's not to offend anyone. I'm the first one to say, I'm pretty dumb too. You know, we've spoken at length. We fall into the same traps over and over and again. We are stubborn. We don't want to change. We know that the Lord wants what's best for us, but we say, no, I got this. I got this. And then we fall flat on our face over and over and over again.
You know the picture that I have in my office, or the painting that I have in my office of Christ leaning over, Christ the Good Shepherd, leaning over the edge on the mountainside, looking for that sheep that's hanging on a branch, so to speak, with vultures, you know, looming overhead. That's us.
Was it the first year of our podcast? You had that video of the sheep who fell into the ditch, and the shepherd pulls it out, and the sheep jumps right back in.
Yeah, jumps right back. Yeah, something like that.
And that's us. We're dumb. We're dumb.
I love us,
but we're dumb.
And I said it at the 5:30 Mass show. I relayed that story of the little kid at the 5:30 Mass yesterday, and this is nothing new. There was a Christian preacher, Christian comedian back in the 1980s. Name was Mike Warnke. He used to be a Satanist and then converted and would go around, and he would make, imagine, and I'm surprised that no one in the Catholic Church has done this. He would go around making observation, like observational humor. This is around before Seinfeld, who perfected observational humor. And he would, and this, so this Christian community would go around and just basically say, this is what we do in church. That's so stupid, you know? And so just the little quirks that we have in church, and would make all these random observations, then tie it all back up to his personal testimony, his witness, yep. And, you know, and then end up with pretty much a sermon. But one day he's talking about, do you know? And then he had this, you know, the Southern drawl. So he looked like he could have been part of that, the blue, was it the blue collar tour, the redneck tour with Jeff Foxworthy and Larry the Cable Guy, and I'm forgetting the other comedians. He goes, do you know why God calls us his sheep? Because sheep are the stupidest animals on the face of the earth. And if you've ever seen sheep, it's true. You know, they're there and they grow out the wool, and then we shave them, we use the wool for our clothing, and they grow it right back. You know, so they have no, you know, and that's how God created them. Yep. And they have no sense of direction. They have to rely blindly on the voice of the shepherd. And that's how we should be in our spiritual life, because if we don't follow, and first of all, if we don't recognize the voice of Christ who calls out to us, if we don't follow that voice, we're going to end up, as Jorge said, right back in that ditch, making the same mistake over and over again, because we, you know, and last night I had, you know, the kids that graduated eighth grade here 4 years ago, they're about to graduate high school and go off to college. And I was telling them, I go, so many times we're lured away by the strangers, the thieves, and the robbers that Jesus mentions here in chapter 10 of St. John's Gospel. And I tell them, don't be lured away by the voices of the world that will lead you to death and ruin. No, follow the voice of the shepherd. In fact, before the verse that we started off yesterday's gospel, where Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, he says, I will lay down my life for my sheep, because a hired man who is not a shepherd and whose sheep are not his own sees a wolf coming and leaves, and the sheep run away, and the wolf catches and scatters them. This is because he works for pay and has no concern. Okay, a thief comes only to steal and to slaughter and destroy. I came, Jesus says, so that they might have life and have it more abundantly. He doesn't just want us to have life. He wants us to have it more abundantly. Because life, we think about, oh, all the good things we have on this earth. No, he wants us to have abundance. That's the beauty of our God. He wants us to have abundance. He wants us to be able to live, you know, our lives to the fullest, but by following him. And so many times we think living life to the fullest, I'm going to venture this way, away from the voice of the shepherd. Well, that'll leave us ruined.
Well, it's the difference between surviving and living. Mm-hmm. You know, and you think of this imagery with the wolf. Yeah, I can do enough to survive an attack of a wolf, but I'm not living. You know, if I'm spending my entire life in this fear, in this worry, you know, where do I put my foot next so I don't fall into a trap? You know, there's a hook over here. There's something. There's danger over here. I'm hiding. I'm scared. We're surviving. I'm still breathing. I'm alive, but I'm not living. Right, but the truth of the gospel, the truth of Jesus Christ, is that freedom, where I don't have to be afraid. Things might still happen, but I don't have to be afraid because I'm secure in the Lord. Right? And that's that juxtaposition between surviving, just getting by, and really living.
And Christ wants us to really live. Christ wants us to be able to live with joy, live with peace. And we trick ourselves sometimes into thinking that we could find life without him, that we could find joy without him, that we could find joy outside of his flock. You know, by going off and, you're going with the flock and you're going in one direction. You see, oh, look at all those people. They're having fun, but they're not following the shepherd. So we have to be able to focus. We have to be able to concentrate and to be able to concentrate in silence to recognize the voice of the shepherd. And it's interesting, Bishop Barron yesterday in his homily mentioned something that Pope Francis had mentioned many times in his talks or homilies about the Good Shepherd, that the shepherd does three things. He leads, he walks with the flock, you know, smells like sheep, and also has to walk behind the flock to say, you know, get back in line, get, you know, or move. Mm-hmm. And that's why, and I mentioned it yesterday to the children, and Bishop Barron mentioned it as well, that's why this, the staff of the bishop is the staff of a shepherd. It has that crooked edge, you know, a crooked side on the top. Well, because that's sometimes to wrangle a sheep that's gone astray. And the bottom one is to kind of, you know, yep, move it along. Come on, go. One of the little kids didn't like that. I go, oh, Jesus wouldn't, you know, grab us by the neck. And well, that's why he sent me as a shepherd, you know, to do the dirty work. But I'm glad that I...
But he would.
Yes, he would.
And we forget that. In that, you know...
To rescue us.
In the... You know, when we all get caught up in happy Jesus and Jesus is my best friend, we forget that. Yeah, when Jesus has to kick us in the pants, he's going to kick us in the pants.
Oh, we don't like that,
though. And he's not going to hold back because he's going to speak to us in truth. And sometimes the truth is I'm going to grab you by your neck and I'm going to drag you out of danger because I love you.
And sometimes that falls to one of his priests. But to make that segue into that's why he called me. Is that yesterday we celebrated World Day of Prayer for Vocations. And so we focus on the image of a priest as shepherd. Yesterday, you know, one of my first students who I adore, who went through, survived cancer twice, and she's just amazing and is a nurse now and happily married, living in Atlanta. And I haven't talked to her in a while. And just out of the blue yesterday around 4 o'clock, sends me a text, Happy Good Shepherd Sunday, Father. And I'm like, this brought joy to my heart when one of my former students just out of the blue texts me that. And thinking of the times that I've rescued her out of ditch, and I will say sometimes she's rescued me because this girl has, you know, a sublime and a beautiful depth to her spiritual life. When you stare death in the face twice, mm-hmm, you would have that. And she did it at a very young age. She was 5 years old and 10 years old, respectively, the two times she dealt with cancer. But just that little message reminds me that of my undeserved responsibility and awesome responsibility to look out at all the people that God has entrusted to my care, that I am responsible for their spiritual lives, that I am responsible to get them into heaven. And you think of that and you say, oh, Father, how in the world can you sleep?
Well, no pressure.
Yeah. You've asked me that several times. And at the end of the day, you know, it happened a couple of times last week that I go into the chapel, talk to Jesus, the Good Shepherd, and then finally say, "You Lord, like John the 23rd, it's your church. I'm going to bed." Because, you know, there's days that are overwhelming. There are days that are very fulfilling. There are days that are so fulfilling that you are so tired at night that you're like, oh, I gotta get my prayers in before I go to bed. But I make them for you. Yesterday, there was another brother priest that reached out to Father Andrew and I and was, you know, a little frustrated about what he did that day and the ministry that he did that day. And I responded to him by saying, in doing that ministry, you're ministering to all of us. And he got it. And he was appreciative. And that's brother priests holding up and raising up other brother priests. Because we're all in this in the trenches, and we know what it takes, and we know the struggles that we go through, and the suffering that we go through for our people. There was a video that Father Andrew shared with me last week about a priest. It was a little, I don't know if I sent it to you, that it was, a priest was an elderly priest. It looked like a religious priest. And he was talking about how a priest suffers for his people. You know, especially those who are lost, especially those who are, you know, caught up in sin, who are, you know, gone from the church. And he gets a little emotional, and he says, well, a priest's life has to be a life of suffering because we're living the life of Christ, and the life of Christ was a life of suffering. And so the first disciples, And the first Christians who were martyred, they rejoiced. And we see that in the Acts of the Apostles that we're reading during the Easter season and daily Mass and even on Sunday Mass. They rejoiced because they got to suffer for the glory of his name. Now, none of us like to suffer. I don't like to suffer. I'd like to wake up in the morning and know that none of my, all my people are here and the flock is safe and the flock is healthy. Just like you as a father and a husband want to wake up in the morning and your wife is healthy and your children are healthy and everybody's happy. You know, that's how, you know, that brings you joy. But the fact of the matter is, as a priest, we have so many people and so many people that we need to reach and so many people we need to evangelize, so many people we need to bring the sacraments to. And we fall so many times, we fall so short of that goal that it entails suffering. Now, I'm not trying to martyr myself or anything. I'm just talking about the priesthood in general. And that's why World Day of Prayer for Vocations, we need to not only pray for priests, but pray that young men out there may recognize the voice of the shepherd to follow him. Because, yes, while there is suffering, there's infinitely more joy. Because we get to celebrate the sacraments, because we get to celebrate the Eucharist, because we get to do, you know, things that we did last week, celebrate a First Communion, or bring people into the church by baptizing them that are adults, by witnessing weddings, by sharing the joys of our people. You know, it's so funny, and this is something so totally random and not sacramental, but, you know, on Friday night at the parent party at the school, you know, I didn't know this was happening. They said, "Father, we have a surprise for you at 10:30. You know, Barbie, our caterer, told us. And I'm like, okay. And I'm around, and she gives me two black gloves. And I'm like, okay. And then I realize she's going to give me the fog machine.
The CO2 cannon,
yeah. And so I unleash the CO2 cannon and all this fog on my parents, school parents, who are there dancing. And to almost every single person that came up to me, "Father, you had so much joy in your face while you were doing that." And just seeing, you know, you think about the imagery of feasts and parties that Jesus, you know, shows in the God, wedding at Cana or the great wedding banquet, and all these things. And the king is looking out and just rejoicing. I'm thinking of the Lord rejoicing because his people are rejoicing. Yep. And if the Lord is rejoicing, then the Lord's servant is, you know, the priest that he sent to represent him here in this parish is also rejoicing. So yes, I was very happy. You know, it was a moment of great joy, of great glee, you know, in terms of just being there with my flock and rejoicing with them. And so these are the things that bring me joy. But again, kind of, you know, the juxtaposition of that is that there are moments that entail great suffering because people don't like, and we discussed this a lot last week, not on the podcast, but just, you know, in general during the week, mm-hmm. you know, that you suffer because people don't like to hear the truth. You see, the truth of the gospel that I have open in front of me, and sometimes it doesn't jive with the truth that we believe, or the life that we want to live, or the way that we want to live it. And so that's why we have to pray earnestly that we could recognize the shepherd's voice so we could follow it blindly.
You know, there's I love the wisdom of the church is that, you know, as you're vesting for Mass, you know, there's different prayers for everything, for each of the vestments that you wear. But as a priest, you know, the wisdom that you guys wear black, and I mentioned it in passing last week, but that there's a beautiful symbolism in that every single morning when you are literally vesting for your day, you are putting on black, you know, and it's that recollection of death, of suffering, you know, as a priest,
you know. Damn, you just depressed me, George.
No, but it's
not nothing I didn't know. I'm just kidding.
It's an important part of the ministry of the priesthood, and you know it's well known. I went to seminary for 2 years and I had an inkling early on that perhaps I wasn't being called to the priesthood, I was being called to seminary. But what really did it for me was that summer in Virginia, where I was in a house by myself. as a seminarian, and I'm going, man, this is
lonely.
This is really lonely. This is hard. You know, I'm a little mojoncito, you know. I'm 21 trying to figure out my own life right now and trying to make sense of all this stuff. But the reality of that smacked me in the face. You know, that signing up for the priesthood, you know, going through with it, it was going to be a life, you know, despite, you know, the camaraderie of fellow priests, it's a hard life. It's a life of suffering every single day. It's a life that can become very lonely. I know that was an extreme example, being in the house entirely by myself because the priest was off ministering at a different, he was assigned to three different churches. So I stayed back on that farm by myself and was responsible for, you know, leading the morning prayer, leading the Bible study at the night. But it was me. Yeah, and I'm not ordained. I'm just seminarian helping out a couple hours for a couple weeks. Y pa'lante. And that's when it really hit me. You know, just what this ministry is really all about. And it is no walk in the park. So I don't want to say it scared me away, but it was a good reality check.
You know, recently, there's a friend of mine. Her and her husband and I were having dinner, and she, all of a sudden, I don't know if we were having dinner or we were having a happy hour, I don't remember, but all of a sudden, she got very worried about that, about what a lonely life a priest is, and not just now, about what will happen to me, especially when I get older and retire, or, you know, and she's like, well, who's going to tend to you, you know, and I'm like, I don't think about that. I don't worry about that. By the way, that's something that my grandmother, when I decided to enter seminary, everybody was on board with, my family was on board with me entering seminary. My grandma was like, eh, but I'm like, I don't want you to die alone.
Right.
I'm like, okay. But I was at 17 years old at the time. I wasn't even thinking of that. And even at 48, I'm not thinking about that now. But this friend was very worried about, you know, I don't want, you shouldn't be lonely. And then when you leave us at night and you go, you're there in the rectory and you're lonely. And I'm like, no. I'm like, you go back and you go back to your children. You go back to having to put them to bed and having to, you know, shower them and having, I go back and, you know, I do my prayers and I go to bed and may turn a ball game on or may turn Sports Center on and everything's fine with the world. I mean, not really, but it's like, at least for me, it is. It's peaceful. Yep. It's like I enjoy that silence and thank God. God, I'm not lonely. I'm in a house with five other priests, and now while we all have our own quarters and our own, but I get to sit with Father Andrew and watch a ball game or watch a movie and share that. Like last night, it was something totally impromptu. Father Uko comes back in beach attire, but I'm talking about in Nigerian beach attire. The man looked fierce. All right. This man walked out there and is like, I am showing off my Nigerian, you know, the threads were just amazing. Silk shirt, silk, you know, black. It was beautiful. He brought me back. I need to wear it. One day when we go to a pool party in your house, I'm wearing this. Okay. But because I go, when am I going to wear this? Now I know when he brought it back. He just came back from Nigeria a couple months ago. So he comes back and I go, Father, and this is like 7 o'clock. 7:30 at night, and I go, Father, what's up? How was your day? Because, you know, he celebrates Mass on Sunday, because Sunday and Monday are his days off from the hospital. So he celebrates Mass here for the people, and then, right, you know, maybe he'll hop out another priest, and then pretty much have the day off. He goes, no, I went to Mathis and Hammock, and just sat there and read, because he's a voracious reader.
Oh.
I mean, this man has so many books. And I'm like, good for you. And then all of a sudden, we just sit down, and we start talking, and I wish we would have recorded that podcast. Because we just start talking about, not that you're doing a bad job, or you're doing a great job. I'm just saying that the conversation that we had about today's, about the gospel we're focusing on now, and the shepherd, and the priesthood. And there's some things that probably weren't for recording, not because they were explicit. It was just like personal things that we priests deal with. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful conversation. So I give thanks to God that I have five brother priests who live with me, and this is the biggest rectory in the archdiocese. There's six of us, to the point where the chancellor once said, Father, it's like you have a monastery there. Well, almost. And I had to feed all these mouths, including mine. And so it's beautiful that we're able to share that, but there are days where, yeah, you feel that loneliness. Because like, I'm blessed now, and I have been blessed in every rectory that I've been in, that there has been at least one other priest. But there are other times that, you know, where maybe me and the pastor may aren't as close as, let's say, I am with Father Andrew or Father Uko, that I remember that in one parish, in the parish, the pastor retired the one end of the house, I'm on the other end of the house, and I'm in, you know, I'm in Broward, I'm nowhere near my family, and I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty lonely today, you know, and I'd call up some parishioners and everybody's busy, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm staying Friday night here and learn to deal with that. And
yeah, but it's those little sufferings that really bring out the joy of the priesthood.
Oh, for sure. Because when you get to see, for example,
I mean, it's ironic to say it, but it's in that suffering, those little martyrdoms that.
I'll give you a perfect example because it happened to me yesterday. Yesterday, like I said earlier in the podcast, we had a reunion of the class of 2020 from St. Teresa. They're eighth graders back then. Now they're seniors about to go off to college. And this was my first year at Little Flower at St. Teresa when I was trying to get to know these kids. They were wonderful children, remarkable class. And just as I'm starting to get to know them, and because the first five months of the year, you know, I was still getting my legs under me, getting to know this parish, getting to know, okay, how this parish runs, how the school runs, and how I, as a pastor and a minister, have to run it. And then finally, February, March comes around, I'm trying to have lunch with these kids and getting to know these kids during recess and all that. And in a blink of an eye, boom, they're taken away from me because of COVID. And they scatter. That word we hear in the gospel today. And so we bring them back after the church reopens and we're allowed to, we had some semblance of a graduation for them. And we had to bring them back again because the diplomas we gave them were not the real diplomas. The real diplomas hadn't arrived because everything was like stopped. And so we gave them real diplomas in August. And then they scatter again and they go off to high schools, and not many of them do I see, you know, every Sunday at Mass. But every time I would see one of them, you know, and I suffered not being able to see them again. This coming August will be 25 years since the first time I walked into a classroom and started teaching. And I've been doing this for 25 years, and every time an eighth grade class graduates, there's a little bit of suffering that I don't have this captive audience anymore. I don't get to see them every day. I don't get to preach to them every day. I don't get to impart life lessons to them every day. They need to go out. But every time they come home, and yesterday as I'm walking into the church, and I'm seeing this person and this person and this kid and this kid and this kid, and then they're all took up one pew towards the back of the first half of the church, and just filled me with joy, filled me with light, because my children had come home. And then I brought them over in the school. We did crazy things in the school, but it was just joyful that those little times where I'm suffering because I don't get to see them, or they're not going to church, or they're going off and they're doing all these crazy things, as I hear things, you know, it's made that joy so much more because, boom, they're here, they're home. It's like the father in the parable of the prodigal son. Let us rejoice and have a party because my son was lost and now, you know, and he's come back home. He was dead and now he's alive. And that happens also every time a penitent kneels down in a confessional and confesses their sins. You know, a priest rejoices because while we dive down into the depths of hell with you as you recount your sins, we get to lift you up and say, okay, but you know what? God loves you. And this is how much he loves you, that he's going to forget all that stuff you just said. And he's going to forgive you. And he's going to shower his mercy upon you so that you could have life and have it more abundantly. But in order to do that, we have to follow the voice of the shepherd and pray. And I want to end with this. Pray every single day for vocations. Because this may sound so oxymoronic, but there is joy in suffering. At least for me. Because, you know, while I suffer for my people, and I suffer, you know, this is what God calls me to do. And this is what brings me joy. You know, it's not because I'm a masochist. It's not because I welcome the suffering. It's that I know when I wake up in the morning that sometime during that day, something will happen that will bring me down, or at least in the eyes of the world. But no, when I get called, you know, I was in Children's Hospital sometime last week because one of my former students, you know, sends me a text. My six-day-old daughter, I remember texting you that I was on my way, stopped breathing. And I cannot fathom what he must have gone through in those 10 minutes. And his wife told me that...
That felt like an eternity.
It felt like an eternity. You live walking distance. You could walk your children to Children's Hospital.
Yep.
They live in Midtown. I'm like, wow. And so there was a period of an hour there that I didn't know if they had gone to Nicholas and I didn't know if they'd gone to Jackson. I just wanted to get to, because she's 60 years old, she hadn't even been baptized. I'm thinking, my goodness. And I love this kid so much. He was such a screw up when he was in middle school and has made a life for himself. And
those are usually the good ones.
Those are the good ones. There's another one that I'm thinking of right now who was a total, and he grew up and, you know, worked for Georgetown Law. And I guess still screwing up because he's working for the United States House of Representatives now as one of their lawyers. But, you know, we'll forgive that. But I went to see him when I went to see him. Now everything was over. I went to see him on Friday. And he was like, you know, everybody was telling me, oh, Father, leave him alone, leave him alone. And he's like, no, this is not how a priest works. You know, a priest goes to pray with the people. Mm-hmm. And he was just so thankful that I took the time to go see him. So thankful that I was so worried about them. And I had been telling them, because they had gotten married, said, like, you guys got to get married by the church. And I'm like, yeah, Father, we've been trying to, we didn't want to tell you, but we got married secretly in the church in Columbia. We don't want to hurt your feelings. Like, you don't hurt my feelings. I'm happy that now I can call this girl your wife. Okay. See, the little sufferings that go boom, that's joy. And that's why he said his wife. That's actually when I just said it now in the gospel, in the podcast, first time I referred to his girlfriend as his wife, because they're married. I go, I don't care that I wasn't there. I go, when you turn a year, I want to do a, you know, mass here and we just, so you could renew your vows.
Don't worry, he wasn't at mine either.
Shut up.
Oh.
Yeah, but the thing is that you invited me yours. He did not. Okay. Whatever. Anyways, but. See, but that's also part of the suffering of priests. Is like I'm trying to be at three places at once, and I couldn't. Okay, because the weekend of your wedding, there were three other weddings, mm-hmm. two other weddings that I had to do, and I couldn't or didn't or whatever. I didn't want to do it. Nah, trying to poke the bear this morning. Anyhow, it's trying to add to my suffering very early on in the morning. All righty. So
I know it brings out the joy of your day.
Whatever. Anyhow, my friends. Listen to the voice of the shepherd, recognize the voice of the shepherd, follow him and pray for vocation, for people, for young men to be able to discern that voice, to be able to follow that voice into this beautiful life of service, this life that is conformed to Jesus Christ, our good shepherd. Every single day, our vocation director of the diocese, Father Matthew Gomez, says it. Every day, pray a Hail Mary for vocations, that God may call shepherds to follow him and to be shepherds after his own heart. Recognize his voice, follow that voice, and you will have life and have life in abundance.
Yes! Yes! The you! The you! The you! The you, baby! The you, baby! Yeah! Whoa! Whoa!
We need a running back. Wow, that's your fiance's boy. Exactly. It's a no-brainer. He's a Hall of Famer.
That guy just...
No, but...
Just, no. Get out of here.
What was that last night?
All right, you just said it. The only thing that matters.
Right now in this town?
Yep. Sports-wise, let's be clear. We're in the sports segment. Mm-hmm. Florida Panthers hockey.
That's all that matters.
Oh, yeah.
Beat up the Lightning.
little electrical shocks.
How much of that game did you actually watch?
I watched quite a bit. I didn't hear any of it because we had the music going. Mm-hmm. But we had the TV on in the background.
And they scored pretty quickly in the first period. I have to confess. I can't
speak too intelligently on it, right. but I did see we obviously scored three times in one.
Right. I can't speak intelligently at all because if this would happen after the first period, I fell asleep.
No.
I did. Because I was here's what's going on. You had the Panthers going at 12:30, Heat starting their playoff series at 1 o'clock, and at 2 o'clock the Marlins start. And I'm like, oh my God, this is sports overload. I need three TVs.
Oh, the Marlins are still playing?
Hold on a second. We'll get to them in a second. And I, for whatever reason, yesterday morning woke up at 5:45. I don't wake up that early, especially on Sundays. Okay, I wake up early on Sundays, but not at 5:45. So I was exhausted after the morning. We had second grade mass. You know, we had a bunch of things going on. And I had started dozing off when the first goal was scored by Sam Reinhart, and the horn or the announcer woke me up. I'm like, oh, and I mean, I was just starting to slip away. And then I was downstairs in the living room. I go, you know what? I need to go upstairs because I'm going to fall asleep here. And Father Andrew's going to come. God bless Father Andrew, but he's not going to let me sleep because he's going to be talking to the entire game. So I go upstairs and I lie down, and you know, took me about 10. I finished watching the first period and then I just dozed off. And when I woke up, I look at my phone and look at the score immediately. It was 3-1, and there were 46 seconds to go in the game. I was like, I went upstairs and I was clicking back and forth between that and the Heat game. But the Panthers, from what I saw, and then what I saw in the recap, came out great energy, came out controlled, at least that first period. Controlled that first period. Mm. I missed. I didn't see the entire first period. I fell asleep before the Tampa Bay goal, or was I watching the Heat game? I don't remember. No, I was watching the Heat game when Tampa Bay equalized it at the end of the first period. And it was, I think, towards the end of the first period that Tampa started getting some momentum, but nobody scored during the second period. Yep. So, I mean, they looked great. Kachuk scored. You know, Rhino scored. Barkov had some assists.
Assist to Vergehi. That was great. A beautiful goal.
But here is, I want to caution you, Jorge, because one of the things I saw in the parts of the game that I saw, and then in the recap that I saw, is that Vasilevskiy still is a wall. We got through him because it was like a goal that was like in an instant. Two of them were like, boom, were like blink and you missed it. So we have to be careful that don't get ahead of ourselves, because this guy, a hot goaltender, a good goaltender, can take you all the way to the Stanley Cup. Look at Bobrovsky last year.
Yep.
So that's all you can contribute to the sports segment, I guess, because you were busy with a 6-year-old pool party.
With 26-year-olds in the pool, yeah.
Oh, fun. no one.
But I will be able to contribute more on game two.
Game two is tomorrow or?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
And I will be there.
We can't go bowling?
No.
Man.
You can go bowling. I will be at the Panthers game.
All right. Anyhow.
Yeah. Let's go.
I hate you. The Heat. Oh. So I guess I switched over during the reason I switched over to watch the beginning of the Heat game because I was very curious to see, all right, how will this...
It was over like 13 seconds in.
Pretty much. Yeah. They came out there and Boston went on literally a 14-0 run to start the game. It was 17-2. The Heat did claw the way back in the first quarter and brought it to within 5. At the end of the first quarter, that's when I fell asleep. And because I knew this was where it was going. And they were trailing by as many as 32.
Ouch.
And in the fourth quarter, a guy who had never heard of, Darrell Wright, comes in and just goes crazy shooting threes for the Heat. But here's the thing. The Heat gave up 50 points in three or something like in threes. You can't win that. You can't win. everything, every three-pointer that, that Celtics are hoisting up was falling. And so it's like, get out of here. But the Heat kept the, you know, kept fighting, and they cut the deficit to 12 late in the fourth. And I'm like, hey, wait a second, with 3:59 left, wait a second, 12-point, you know. And Boston had to take all the starters they had benched, bring them off the bench because make sure, and they ended up winning by 20. But you know, it gives, unfortunately, gives us a little bit of hope. It's that without
it's
Jimmy,
the hope that kills you,
right? That maybe possibly they'll do something and maybe steal a game here or there just to make Boston's life interesting. Whatever. Before we move on, because I want to dwell on the playoffs here, because there were 8 NHL Stanley Cup playoff games this weekend, and there were 8 NBA games. First time since 2004, Jorge, that all 8 home teams of a game one won on opening weekend of the NBA playoffs. Yep. Okay.
And the NHL is 6 for 8 so far. There's 2 more today.
There's 2 teams that haven't played game one? Pretty sure everybody played game one.
Let me see.
Anyways, the game that I wanted to highlight, I didn't watch any of this game, but this was a crazy, crazy game. Your Colorado Avalanche and your Winnipeg Jets in the first
on a shootout.
First period, both teams had 3 goals. So it was 3-3 at the end of the first. Yes. The game ended 7-6. It looked like a football score. 7-6. The Winnipeg Jets won. Winnipeg Jets scored more than the NFL Jets.
Today the Stars and Golden Knights and the Kings and Oilers have game one.
I was wondering why I hadn't seen a Vegas score. That's why. Yep. The NHL schedule is weird. Anyhow, so it was a great weekend for the Panthers. Not so great weekend for the Heat. You mentioned the Marlins earlier. The Marlins did not lose a series this weekend.
No, we didn't.
That should be a victory. We split. And in fact, we should have won it.
We should have won it.
Because we were ready. We had a rookie pitcher that went in there and pitched his heart out. And we had the lead. And then Tanner Scott comes in. Gives up 3 singles in a row and blows the lead and I think it was in the nightcap on Saturday. That was the nightcap on Saturday.
But we stole game one, so.
We stole game one.
It's
game one,
out.
Brian De La Cruz, we were down, hits a monster home run into the teeth of the Wrigley Field wind, which is nothing to shake, you know, the stick at. That's just amazing what he did. And so we did steal that one. So we split that series with the Chicago Cubs, and God bless the Cubs. They're always our, you know, we love playing the Cubs because we always beat them. Yes. They have Craig Council now as their manager. How about that?
And now we get the Braves again.
Oh, joy. The Braves. Scottie Scheffler. This morning, right before we started recording, they finished the final round because it was delayed. They had to stop yesterday, so they finished it. Won a tournament after winning the Masters last week. This hasn't been done since your boy Bernard Langer did it in 1985.
I remember it.
Yep. Bernard Langer's still tearing it up on the senior tour, by the way. He's pretty good. But Scottie Scheffler, yesterday, you know, he just basically announced, I'm going to win this. On the second hole, off the green, pitch it in, hold out for an eagle. He's like, seriously, everybody, go away.
Nope.
Everybody, you're all playing for second place and for the $1 million you're going to make for second place. And that's what happened. Scottie Scheffler, just unbelievable. Everybody's praying that his wife goes into labor, so he just stops showing up to events.
There was a funny, is it an X now? It's not a tweet anymore.
It's still a tweet.
Yeah, I know. It sounds terrible.
It's still Twitter.com.
Does it still work?
Yeah. No, it doesn't. It's still Twitter.com. I mean, you could put X.com, but it's still Twitter.com. When you look it up on the address bar,
yeah,
it still says Twitter.com.
So someone tweeted, don't worry, Scottie Scheffler will be humbled very soon. With a picture of the little dad bed in the delivery room.
Yes.
He goes, once his wife goes into labor, he's going to have to suffer through that dad chair.
Even with two green jackets and $16 million he's made over the last 2 months. And then a female sportscaster from ESPN says, please do not compare that to the suffering that his wife will undergo. Don't even remotely go there. Moms, you have it. Jorge, I made a mistake on Saturday, and I'll tell you what I did. I may have told you last week. I don't remember if I did or not. Somebody on Wednesday, we went to UM baseball game.
Yes.
With the kids. Kids sang a beautiful national anthem. In fact,
did you have a marked like milkshake?
I did not, because when I got there, it closed after 7:30. So I didn't get it. The sisters did, which was great. Father Andrew's parents go a lot to the games, and they said the kids were probably the best rendition of the national anthem they've heard all year at Mark Light Stadium. And before I get into the story, I just have to say it's the worst Miami baseball team I have ever seen. And I remember I would go see baseball because there was no baseball in town when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I would go there. Mark Light was, 5 minutes from my house.
Yep.
Anyhow, but there was a friend of mine was there and offered me 4 tickets to the Inter-Miami game on Saturday night. And we had our old pastor, Father Davis, coming in to do a wedding, and I wanted to sit with him and visit with him. And I'm like, Father Davis, Inter-Miami, Father Davis, Messi, Father Davis. I chose a brother priest. And Messi goes off, scores a goal, then scores another goal on a penalty, and then assists on the other goal. Ooh. Busquets gets his first goal ever with Inter-Miami, and they beat Nashville, pretty good team. Yep. 3-1, I'm like,
could have been there.
And it was also the thought of getting out.
Oh, that's rough.
Having 9 a.m. mass the next morning, that also played into the decision, but what an idiot I am. But they're in first place in the East, and they're clicking all cylinders. When Messi's out there, it's poetry. It really is. It really is. And at some point, I'm going to go see them in person. I'm not going to invite you. Anyhow, invite me to a Panther game.
My tickets.
You did last week. I have to say, defend Jorge. He did last week, but I had a parent meeting with last Tuesday when we won the division. So, and last but I'm not least. It is least because I'm tired of hearing about this. This Thursday is the NFL draft, and I want the NFL draft to happen so I don't have to hear about the NFL draft anymore. Because you turn on any sports channel, you turn on ESPN. Since February, that's all they've been doing. I mean, baseball's going on, Masters are going on, NBA playoffs are going on, NHL playoffs are going on, and all I want to talk about is what Washington's going to do with the number 2 pick, or what you're going to do with the number 3 pick, or who is Derek May better than Jalen Daniels, and I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. I just want, you know why? Because the Dolphins don't have a high pick, and I'm tired of that. Okay? Tired of it. So I got a rant.
We got our new bumper.
I'm just tired of it. And it's like, well, Father, you're going to record your reaction to the 21st. I go, I'll probably be asleep. And I'll be awake. But still, I'm like, it's just this year, I don't know why. It's like every single, I could count probably every single day, because everybody knows that Chicago's going to take Chase Daniels with the first pick. Every single day, well, what's Washington going to do a 2 and New England going to do a 3? I don't care anymore. Dan Lebertard says it perfectly. We're bartering on hope. If anyone tells you that they know that any of these quarterbacks will be good in the NFL, they are lying to you. They are lying to you. You know why? Because the best player in the NFL was the last pick in the first round and sat out his first year. Patrick Mahomes II. And he has not one, not two, but 3 Super Bowl rings. It's BFF with Taylor Swift. All right? I'm tired of it.
How about Brock Purdy?
And Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant. That, even better analogy. Guy took his team to the Super Bowl last year. And right now is the Vegas favorite to win the Super Bowl next year. So we're bartering on hope. And listen, as someone who over the last 20 years has hung on all this draft chatter, that goes on with the Miami Dolphins, I could understand it. Like when we drafted Tua, when we drafted Jalen Phillips, when we drafted Jalen Waddle, all these guys, even Christian Wilkins, who no longer, poor one out for him, he's no longer with us. But we need a defensive tackle, we need linebackers, and we need some help on the offensive line. Please don't draft a wide receiver. We don't need running backs. Maybe take a flyer in the late rounds and draft a quarterback. Maybe a Brock Purdy or Tom Brady's there. Or you can't put Brock Purdy and Tom Brady in the same sentence. I'm sorry. I apologize to the GOAT. But I'm just tired because every day it's the same questions. And they keep, and I must be getting ratings because they keep going. And I'm like, are there not baseball games? Like the other day I was watching SportsCenter, and it took them, they were, the full slate of baseball games on Saturday. Because, okay, I woke up at 5:45, so I watched the Overnight Sports Center at 6 a.m. And all this time on the NBA playoffs and the couple games they played in the NHL, it wasn't until half an hour in that they showed highlights of one game, the Yankees-Tampa game. I remember when SportsCenter would cover every single and show highlights of every single game.
Yep.
But and thankfully, didn't mention the NFL draft.
So I got a big question for you.
Yeah.
Who you have at 2 and 3?
Shut up. I could care less. You and I saw Derek May. Yeah, good quarterback. But is he someone you want on your team? North Carolina? How did that work out for Mitch Trubisky?
Yep.
Coming out of North Carolina. How'd that work out? Jalen Daniels had a couple of good games that got him the Heisman Trophy last year. I thought Michael Penix deserved it over him. Mm-hmm. That's just me. Could care less. I mean, it'll be intriguing. I'll watch it. In fact, I usually have it on my schedule. I don't even think I have it on my schedule. But I don't. I should put it on my schedule. So I'm just done with it, Jorge. We'll talk about it on Monday with absolutely no, just like most Mondays, with actually no knowledge of what we're talking about, because you know what? Not even the so-called experts and draftniks know what they're talking about, because no one had Patrick Mahomes being what he is, because they all thought he was a Graham Harrell, who also another great quarterback that came out of Texas Tech. Remember him, firing it around, in the mid-2000s. So done with the NFL draft. Just done with it. I just want it to be done. Talk to me when it's training camp. Okay, just, I don't want to deal in hope anymore. I want to deal with reality. Kick the football off. The new kickoffs should be fun.
It should be fun.
Okay, something?
I like it.
You know who does that? And this is something that if you really want to mess with Father Andrew, he does not like any semblance of spring football. Like last year, XFL was going on in the USFL, and they merged to form the UFL. The other day, I put it on. It goes, no, take that off.
No, I can't watch it.
He's like, no, take that off. I'm like, there's nothing else on. Like, no, I don't want to see spring football. I don't want to see spring football. Whatever. All right. I think we've exhausted every sports topic. There was a lot of games going on. The Panthers were playing. He were playing. Martins were playing. You know what else was going on? Pretty big sporting event for my parishioners. El Clásico was going on. Real Madrid and Barca. And Real Madrid comes out on top. I can't end the podcast, Jorge. We can't end the podcast without saying happy birthday to your sister.
Of course.
Happy birthday to your little sister.
Happy birthday.
Oh, you just she's going to kill you. Oh, no. Gina, we love you. Have a great birthday. Make good decisions. We're both laughing here. Anyway, but we love you. And we dedicate this episode to you. And that's it. Friends, pray for vocations. Pray for Jorge's sister that she make good decisions today on her birthday. She
doubling down. Yeah, you're in trouble now.
No, she's great. She's gonna have a great. Is she working today? Because Wayne put up a nice sign. Yeah. You're halfway to 70.
Halfway to 72.
Oh, that's just bad. That's just bad. We just revealed your sister's birth. Your sister's
Wayne
names.
Did. Anyone driving down 57 sees it.
Oh boy. Anyhow, we love you, Gina. Pray for vocations. Pray to the Good Shepherd that you may recognize his voice, and may Almighty God bless you in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.